Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a recording of an Easter and Ascension sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Pentecost Sunday, May 27th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Easter and Ascension sermons. Now, when you make your gift, please indicate whether you want a downloadable version or a CD of these sermons. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us during the Easter season.
Within decades of his death in the 8th century, he, well, at least in the eyes of those who survived him in the church, he came to be known as the Venerable, Bede the Venerable. I know it's an unusual name, and it may be someone you've never heard of, but he's a significant figure, so significant that he's regarded as the last of the early church fathers. And on the 25th of May, the church remembers Bede the Venerable. We'll do so today on this Wednesday afternoon, May the 23rd. Dr. Bill Weinrich joins us. He's professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Weinrich, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Always good to be with you, Todd.
Dr. Weinrich, he is referred to, Bede the Venerable, as the last of the early church fathers. Why is that?
Well, I guess somebody needs that honor. In the East, it is often thought of as John of Damascus. Bede is a good one. First of all, we should consider his date, which you mentioned, as the late 7th century. But he probably is worthy of such an epithet by virtue of the fact that he summarizes in his many works, many biblical commentaries, he summarizes much early Christian comment. He was clearly well-read. He was the preeminent scholar of early medieval Anglo-Saxon England. And with this wonderful library he had in that monastery, a remarkable library for that period of time and place, he had read much. And so we know a lot of Augustine, Primasius, Tychonius. He was well read in the earlier Latin tradition. So he's a summarizer in many ways, although he is also quite creative in some of his own comments.
This is a man who, kind of at that point in history, is able to look back and actually, in a written form, it sounds like you're saying he, at least at that point, epitomizes what the church has been up to for the last 7 centuries.
Well, epitome is a very good word, in fact, yes. And as I say, he brings together, he often quotes. Many of his comments on biblical books are not totally creative. He doesn't think of himself as a creative thinker. He thinks of himself as a faithful traditor, hander honor, of Christian thinking. And for him, that Christian thinking is predominantly Augustinian, but he certainly gives evidence of having read more widely than that.
He is also a translator, an exegete in his own right, and I understand that for him, his language being English, he would represent some of the earliest serious theological work in the English language, wouldn't he?
Well, I think we might even say probably the earliest. I mean, there are others before him, but they were hardly writers of the quality and extent that he was. Born in 673, he was, as a very young boy, handed over to the monastery of Jero, and it is doubtful that he ever left that area, which is around modern-day Newcastle in England, northern England. It's doubtful he ever went more than, say, 20, 25 miles away from that place. But it happened to be the place of greatest learning. People like Benedict Biscop, that Chalwith, his own monastic mentor, made several trips to Rome at each occasion, bringing back with them treasures, and those treasures including significant texts and books. And so he had access to one of the most remarkable of all early medieval libraries. And reading, of course, was as yet not widespread. Certainly writing was not widespread. So we are immensely benefited by the scholarly industry of Bede the Venerable.
It does also kind of speak against the typical notion of these Middle Ages as a time where learning languished, especially in the church, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but we shouldn't over-romanticize. This is the latter part of the 7th century, and the Roman, of course, the Roman hegemony and the security of the Roman Empire had long since vanished from the British Isles. It was now under increasing threat by the Angles, the Saxon kings of Northumbria and Mercia were oftentimes somewhat brutal, although the kings of Northumbria were very supportive of Bede and his enterprises. But it wasn't a safe period of time. And so while one finds people like Bede and Benedict Biscop and others who are kind of islands of this incredible scholarship and this writing and preservation of manuscripts and the production of new manuscripts, one finds these islands of such activity. It was hardly every place. So it was still the beginning of what sometimes is called the Dark Ages, but you do have these luminaries that shine perhaps all the brighter because they did that kind of work, and at such a high excellence that it's quite remarkable that we still have what they produced.
Talk about those works, in particular, his ecclesiastical history of the English people.
Well, yes. I mean, what an incredible gift to us that book is. Bede attempts to write a history of the English people, without that text, we would know significantly less about the early centuries of the church in England that we now do. It is especially helpful from, let us say, the centuries from 300 on to his own life. So let us say 250, 300 to 700, we have a fairly accurate and thorough rendering of the history of the English people, and especially, of course, the rise of Christianity there, its spread, especially in the northern parts of the country, and eventually, of course, its victory over not only paganism, but also Celtic Christianity. And so, without Bede, our knowledge of these years in English history would be virtually non-existent.
Two final questions, Dr. Weinrich. He is within, I guess, a decade of his death, referred to as Venerable, and that name sticks. What does that mean, and why was that given to him?
Well, it's an honorific epithet. It means the honorable, the one who is worthy of praise and honor and respect. Of course, we get veneration from that, and it simply reflects the very high view that already his contemporaries had of Bede. And so it is an honorific epithet that he very quickly acquired, and evidences, as I said, the contemporary respect that he had already acquired, and indeed the ongoing respect that anyone who reads Bede's works must have for him.
The Church, of course, observes the person work of Bede on the 25th of May. What has been, in your estimation, his greatest contribution to the ongoing life of the Christian Church?
Well, I think, first of all, we've mentioned one of his major works, The History of the English People, but his Bible commentaries are valueless in terms of their epitomizing of earlier Christian writing. They are valueless in terms of the kind of Christianity, the fundamental Christian thinking that was now to motivate the English church for the next few centuries. So he's like just a window upon the English Christianity of the early Middle Ages, and I urge everyone to read his commentaries. Increasingly, they are in English, and so they're worthwhile reading. I might also add, lest it be forgotten, that one can still pay homage to Bede in his burial place at the wonderful and beautiful cathedral at Durham in northern England. And he lies in the back part of the church, rear part of the church. So, and the other end towards the high altar, of course, is St. Cuthbert, the great saint of Lindisfarne. So there in that wonderful cathedral, you have two of the most important early Christian saints, one best known for sanctity, Cuthbert, the other known for scholarship, Bede the Venerable.
Dr. Bill Weinrich is professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Weinrich, thank you so much for your time.
Always good to be with you, Todd. Thank you very much.
Well, one of the things that the great New Testament theologian St. Paul points out, he says something that sounds like an encouragement for men who are entering the pastoral ministry. When a man desires the office of a bishop, an overseer, he desires a noble task. It's also a very difficult task, and of course, Paul's own life reflects that. A realistic approach to what the pastoral ministry means, what work in the church and for the church really means, is found in our Issues, etc. Book of the Month for May, Holding Up the Prophet's Hand. You can find out more at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and order a copy for yourself, a copy for your pastor, Holding Up the Prophet's Hand, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Here's what's coming up on Issues, etc. Tomorrow, the Historic Liturgy Series continues with Pastor Will Whedon. We'll also be talking with our Pastor's Roundtable about John 14, verse 23 through 31, if you're keeping track. Friday, we're going to discuss the new evangelical approach to homosexuality and evaluate it with Joe Dallas. Also, we'll play Issues, etc. soundbite of the week. Monday on the program, The First Pentecost with Dr. Arthur Just and Classical Christian Education. Pastor Heath Curtis and Jocelyn Benson will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues, Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues, Etc. comment line. Available 24/7. 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.